wasn't allowed to run to first.
I was going to say, how do we know it was a single?
David Price went to go see Dr. Andrews, and he got a lollipop and a 10-day waiting period.
Yeah, this came up because he did a bat flip in the World Baseball Classic, and the ball didn't leave the park. So and he was trotting out of the box and only got a single.
And welcome to Artificial Turf Wars, episode number 48, where we have recently learned that, due to daylight savings time, Rob Manfred has announced all games will now be 8 innings long. I am your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined, as usual, by Joshua Howsam. How are you this fine evening, Josh?
I'm doing quite well, Gregory.
You're not snowed in?
No, it's not snowing much here in Toronto.
Sweet. Not snowed in is the way we prefer to be around here. we have news about both the injured Devin Travis, the injured Josh Donaldson. We're going to talk about Kendrys Morales and how his spring has worked out so far. We're going to visit the sad Team Canada at the World Baseball Classic and some other Jays connections. And then we're going to talk about one wild card that might make the team out of spring training, but, don't hold your breath on that. So first of all, I need to start with an important recap. The Blue Jays are, sadly, 5-11. They remain 7 games back of the Yankees in this divisionless, playoffless grapefruit league. And I'm really not liking their chances here, Josh.
Just doesn't really seem like there's going to be a run this year. It's kind of disappointing. I was looking to see them host that big fruit and take a nice big juicy syrup slip out. I screwed that up. Well, yeah, that's what happens when you try to make jokes about grapefruit league titles.
I would say that even though I'm not a grapefruit fan per se, I would much rather win whatever prize it is for the grapefruit league than for the cactus league. I feel like there's nothing cactus related that I would want to take home with me.
Oh, apparently if you're like really thirsty in a desert, they have water in them. So, you know, there's some value there.
Yeah, I guess. Still going to take the grapefruit. So in Grapefruit League action, other than not winning very many games, Devin Travis and Josh Donald. Now, were they actually in a game? The minor league complex, which sounds like it would be really fancy, but of course it's not, is it?
No.
No. So they got in a pretend real game, or is it a pretend game, and they were allowed to swing the bat against live pitching.
Yeah. Travis got a single and wasn't allowed to run to first.
I was going to say, how do we know it was a single? Because there was a restriction.
It was a single to right, too, so we've seen guys get thrown out from the outfield, so...
Especially if they don't run. Did they actually use a ghost runner?
I don't know. I didn't see any details about that. But Donaldson hit a home run. 420-foot bomb, apparently, according to Richard Griffin. So that's nice.
He has his feet underneath him.
Yeah. Which is always better than not, because then it means you're probably falling down. Josh Donaldson was always supposed to... get into games this week. There was thoughts that he might even play in the real games. He probably will in the next day or two get into one of the actual Grapefruit League games where they count. Travis, probably not.
What do they count for at that point?
Well, they count for if you want to go on the DL.
Yes. As you pointed out last week.
They matter in that sense. Travis won't, probably for that exact reason, just in case he's not fully ready so they can backdate his DL stint so he could basically come back any day. Because now that the deal is only 10 days long, he can come back within any day because you can backdate it 10 days.
Did we ever talk about that when we talked about the CBA?
I don't know. That was so long ago.
We got excited about a lot of other things in the CBA, but I don't think we got... So is it 10-day DL for everybody?
Yeah, and we did talk about this.
I feel like I wasn't there, and I remember hosting all these shows.
Or maybe I just talked about it with other people. But yes, the 10-day DL exists. That's all it is. That there's a 10-day disabled list. So there's no more of this Troy Tulowitzki's hurt. He might go on the DL maybe for 6 games, and then he goes on the DL anyway. You just toss him on the DL, and you get him back in 10 days.
Which, and I guess that works better for starters because now you could potentially have them only miss one start on the DL if you really want to juggle things and off days and stuff, right?
Yep.
Well, that's cool. Totally irrelevant to what we were talking about, though. So Travis and Donaldson, they're doing well. The other guy you wanted to talk about was Kendrys Morales because he's new and shiny, and as much as a DH can be shiny and new. And he doesn't seem
especially
to be having
a 34-year-old one.
Yeah. any problems with the pitching so far?
No, he's actually looked really, really good. You know, it's, again, spring training, so the numbers don't really matter or, you know, matter at all. But he had another big home run today. He's crushed one to right field, and I guess that was yesterday. Sorry about that. And he's mashing this spring. I think he's hitting 455 with a 970 OPS or something stupid like that. But you know, it's nice to see him coming and hit the ground running because he's going to be such a huge part of this offense.
Yeah, the Jays have put a lot of eggs in that basket, so to speak. I don't know if that metaphor works, but yeah, he is going to be super important that he is both healthy and effective for this team because he is essentially Encarnacion's replacement, and every year Encarnacion put up some massive numbers for the past 5 years.
Actually, I was wrong. His OPS is 1.4. yeah, I don't think that anyone's really expecting him to replace Encarnacion's numbers. But I think the idea is that he, combined with Bautista playing better, can replace what the two of them gave last year, which I actually think is a reasonable bet.
Oh, yeah. I'm not stating that he has to turn into Edwin Encarnacion, but he has to, again, he has to be healthy and he has to produce, you know, consistently over the course of the season. And they're tied to him for 3 years, even though he's not terribly expensive. You know, we've seen that with Justin Smoke, a guy doesn't have to be terribly expensive to affect the way a team builds around their position, so to speak. Can I segue to Justin Smoke now?
If you want.
Justin Smoke sat down with an interview because it's, I guess they're contractually obligated, are they, to sit down and explain how they're going to be better people this year. And he explained that he's not going to try and, I guess, hit his way into the record books, that he's going to try and put the bat on the ball instead of try and hit a 3-run home run every time.
Huh.
Why does it take players years and years?
That's kind of a new question. It's like, so you struck out 900% of the time last year, and just now you're like, you know, maybe I should try to hit the ball a little bit more.
There was some discussion that I looked into about the fact that the only thing that Justin Smoke does better, you know, than your typical replacement player is hit the ball very, very hard when he hits it. He doesn't hit it very often, which is the problem. But now I start to think, okay, does that mean he's not going to be swinging as hard? Because if that's the case, then his one notable skill he just threw in the toilet.
Well, hopefully it just means, you know what, I don't know. I was gonna say hopefully it means he's got like a more level swing, but level swing isn't good, so I don't know what the deal is.
He it's was talking maybe about picking his pitch better, that is, not trying to get a hit every at bat, trying to, you know, and that strategy I understand has been espoused by a lot of good hitters, is you're hunting for the good pitch, you're not trying to make something happen because you've only got three strikes and you better swing it at least two of them to, yeah, you know, make something happen. It's like, okay, I could see that, but at the same time, it's just like you couldn't have done that in the middle of last season.
This is kind of what the Adam Dunn problem, which he would take so many pitches, he'd walk 100 times a year, but he'd always get himself into these two strike counts, and then people would throw him something nasty and he'd strike out. And that's what Justin Smoke kind of does. So if he can actually start just like, hey, look at that first strike fastball, I'm going to hit that one instead of waiting for the curveballs down at my feet to swing at, that would be nice.
Yeah, or even saying, hey, you know what? I do know that's a curveball, and I'm not Superman, and I can't hit
that's
it out
not
of
happening.
The dirt. That's, I mean, and that's what it comes right down to, is the ability to recognize that, right? Rajai Davis will tell you how important it is to recognize the breaking ball outside.
No, yeah, David, the thing with Smoke is funny. Is if you throw that curveball or the slider that breaks down and into his feet, he'll take that. It's that curveball that starts in the strike zone over the middle and then goes down out of it. He swings at that every single time.
And you know he knows that, right? I mean, you know he's watched the film. So, yeah, expecting some sort of revelation there is high hopes for us. You know what else is high hopes? Kevin Pillar walking.
Yeah.
He has done it, I believe someone said, 5 times in the spring.
2 today.
Two Kevin Pillar walks in a night was usually an indictment of the pitcher.
Still might have been in spring training.
You don't know. I actually have more faith in Justin Smoke being more selective than I do in Kevin Pillar being able to up his on base to something above average by taking, you know, bad pitches and turning them into walks. Which do you have more faith in?
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, I've been watching this, and he has been taking a lot of closer pitches. I don't know if someone just said to him, finally, Kevin, stop swinging at everything. You know, maybe they hoped his first few years in the career he'd figure it out on his own, and they realized it wasn't going to happen. I don't know, but he's been doing it. And if he can, that'd be really good. I mean, he showed that for a little bit in 2015. There was that stretch where he just stopped swinging at everything, and he did really well. You think maybe he would have tried to continue that into 2016. Didn't happen.
So, yeah. Players work on some beliefs that are obviously not rational. You know, there's no other explanation. They're individuals, and I don't know. You ever had an argument with someone, you try and tell them something 15 times, and then they're, you know, your other friend comes by and goes, hey, you should really do this. And they go, yeah, that's a good idea. And then you're like, I just told you. That was what you were supposed to... Okay, fine. Just fine. you know, maybe he needs a different perspective. Someone who he didn't think was, you know, was going to tell him something about hitting. And maybe they did say something to him. I don't know. These secrets may go with Mr. Pillar to his grave. Because I'm certainly not going to ask him.
Yeah.
World Baseball Classic was the next item on the agenda. Canada. Insert funeral march here. They were 0-3 and out.
That's... And really, really bad showings in every game.
Yeah. My understanding is they did not have good pitching.
Well, when you start Ryan Dempster twice in a 3-game set, a guy who hasn't pitched in 3 years, says a lot about your pitching staff.
So we all saw this coming, though. So... you know, I don't think there's a real, is it worth doing a postmortem on?
Well, I think there was some hope that they'd be able to beat Colombia. And now I think they might have to qualify for the next World Baseball Classic because they went 0-3. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think that might be the case.
That would be fine with me, to be honest. If something wakes up the professional players that, you know, this is a tournament worth playing in by that point, that would be cool. Obviously,
but the professionals can't play in the qualifiers because they're held during the season.
Well, then we're really boned, aren't we?
Yep.
I don't know. Is it wrong for me to cheer for the Dominican Republic every year in this tournament, or every time this tournament comes around?
Kind of.
They seem to be enjoying themselves. Like, they really...
It's okay to cheer for them once Canada's out.
Well, that's pretty much the whole tournament anyway, isn't it? Okay, we're going to get probably a tweet about that.
What it's worth mentioning, I'm stealing your job for a second here, yes, from this tournament, is that Don Pompey, who needed to stay healthy, did not.
Well, that was easy. he slid too hard into second base, was that what I heard?
Yes, he stole second.
Yeah.
Successfully.
With his face. And his head.
Yeah.
And is now lightly concussed. It seems so rare that we hear about a serious concussion, because it really doesn't matter how serious a concussion is. It's a concussion. It takes however long it takes. So hopefully it doesn't take long.
Yeah. It really sucks, because he needed to have a big spring training, and even then he might not have wrestled the job from Ezekiel Carrera, which makes no sense, but it's the way it is. But more importantly, he just needs to stay healthy all year to show what he is. I mean, last year was a lost season for him because he kept getting hurt. If it happens again, then how can anybody make any kind of bet on him?
And one of his injuries last year, of course, included a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, you don't want multiple concussions. I know this isn't hockey, but still, you don't want to show a predisposition to getting concussed, do you?
No.
Yeah. On the bright side, Jose Bautista is having a good time at the World Baseball Classic. He threw a runner out at the plate. I'm sorry. Why is it funny? Because he two-hopped to throw from shallow left field.
There's only one hop.
Yeah, only because the catcher was 15 feet in front of first base making the tag, or in front of home plate making the tag.
Yeah, it was not a great throw.
And everyone's like, oh, Bautista threw somebody. I'm like, yeah, I don't think that's... That should have been on the fly. To me.
Yeah. I mean, so StatCast data, of course, comes in because it likes to ruin everything. But 88.6 miles per hour, which on the bright side, he only had two throws harder than that last year. On the not-so-bright side, that's not that hard for a throw from the outfield.
No, and if people are thinking, well, you know, pitchers throw 90 miles an hour, 97, yeah, the pitcher is standing still and pushing off of one leg. Bautista has the advantage of launching his entire body if he needs to get the throw down. So he should be over 90 miles an hour without even thinking about it if he needs to throw as hard as he can possibly throw.
Yeah, it was not an overly impressive throw. It was a huge throw in terms of the game.
Yes. It accomplished wonderful things, and for that I applaud the throw.
But not impressive.
Yeah, no.
But what has been impressive was his bat.
Yes, Joey Bats is still Joey Bats.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe Joey Bats again? Because last year, and Matt Gwynn wrote a piece on this at some point in the offseason, I think it was back in October or November, basically pointing out that Bautista's home runs last year were 20 feet shorter on average than they were the year before, which is a huge difference.
Oh, yeah. And from that, the hard hit metrics that StatCast is coming out with, he went from like a top 10 player in all of baseball in 2015 to I can't find him on the list in 2016.
Yeah. And that home run that he hit off of, was it Mullican for Team Canada? Was it just a bomb? He absolutely crushed it. Just like some of his home runs in the spring for the Blue Jays over in Dunedin, he's been hitting the ball far, which is a huge difference and really, really nice to see.
Well, and that's how you keep that home run to fly ball ratio, which is the super critical thing for guys like Donaldson and Bautista, because they swing with huge uppercuts. Same with Trumbo and all those guys. If you're swinging with a huge uppercut, it has to get out all the way out, and you know, a little random variation. You want to have a 20-foot cushion on your home, on your fly ball distance, that still gets over the fence. You can't be hoping for wall scrapers all the time. So yeah, I hope he keeps it up.
I mean, obviously. Yeah, last year Bautista single-handedly kept our swinging the drive clips going because he kept hitting those big swings that would fly balls at the track.
And that's not so good. The other connection is Marcus Stroman, who was shoving for Team USA,
including striking out Mr. Bautista. So I've talked about this before too, I think. One of the big things for Marcus Stroman, he has this incredible repertoire of pitches. His three fastballs have completely unique movement, and he's got the big slider. But his issue last year, and we definitely talked about this a few times, he would just go sinker, 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 and get ripped. He was throwing every pitch in that game, and he got at least two of his strikeouts, maybe even three, with four-seam fastballs up. And if he's doing that, it's so big. And I think it could mean a really, really good year.
Well, one of the big thrills about Stroman when he first came up, and this was an article over at Fangraphs, was each of his pitches, not just the fastballs at the time, they weren't aware of the three different, you know, fastballs, but each of his pitches compared favorably to one of the best pitches of a, you know, like a top 10 starter in baseball. He had a great sinker compared to other sinkers. He had a great curveball compared to other curveballs. He had a, you know, on and on. If he just locks himself in and doesn't understand his repertoire, big problem. Which, like you said, is where he got hurt, was not having confidence to throw that whole repertoire.
Mm-hmm. And he started doing that towards the end of last season, and his numbers improved. So if he does that all year, I think it could be, you know, we could see the Marcus Stroman that we thought we were going to see last year.
Do we have Yu Darvish 2.0?
No.
No, because you don't have
He's not going to strike out like 240 guys.
Yeah, you don't have that 97 mile an hour heater quite. Not that I am complaining about Marcus Stroman, because I'm not. Because I'd really like him to be the breakout candidate in the rotation, because I think everybody else has already broken out, haven't they?
Maybe.
All right, last thing for our pre-interview chit-chat. We have the Dark Horse Bullpen Candidate of the Week. Give us a name.
So I've mentioned him a few times, I think, now. And when I was on Effectively Wild this past week, previewing the Blue Jays, I talked about him as well. Tim Mayza, apparently not the only one who's noticing. I mean, there's lots of people who have noticed now as well. But Mark Shapiro was on Primetime Sports, and they asked him, is there anybody that could break with the club that we're not thinking about? And he basically said, no, but maybe this one guy, Tim Mayza. And he talked him up. It's like, you know, throwing mid-90s, power slider, lefties have no chance. It sounds like he's probably not going to break camp with the team just because they have a bunch of guys who are out of options. But that they're expecting him to be a factor this year.
And we hear this every spring, but it is fair to remind people that it is never a seven-man bullpen for 6 months, and it's the same seven guys, ever, for so many reasons.
Yeah, if you're under 15, something weird has probably happened.
So if you consider that this guy has raised himself into the top 10 arms in the relief part of the organization, you're probably going to hear about Tim Mayza before, oh, I'd say July, which is like before you know it.
Yep.
So before you know it, it's come time to talk to our friends over at Bird's Eye View Baltimore. We've got Jake joining us tonight, and we're going to talk to him about the Baltimore Orioles' potential this season, coming up right after this. And we would like to welcome back to the program, Jake from Bird's Eye View Baltimore. Jake, welcome back. It is 2017. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Baltimore just got blasted with what turned out not to be a blizzard, so things are all good.
Excellent, excellent. So you probably have to go to work tomorrow, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you probably. They prefer it when I show up.
Love the concept. I'm going to start by annoying you with the throwback, but maybe not the throwback in the way you thought I would. How annoyed are Baltimore Orioles fans at the Zach Britton joke?
I don't know. It depends. It depends on which ones they are, because some of them are really still fired up about it, and some of them moved on because they're, you know, like emotionally stable.
I just can't believe
it. Just depends on the day, guys. It just depends on the day.
It hasn't died yet. Every so often, it's like, oh, there's Zach Britton still in the bullpen out in Toronto.
You know, it's really funny because we have an event every year called FanFest. I'm sure you guys have the same type of deal where it's
nope, ours got canceled.
No.
Oh.
Our ownership doesn't like these sorts of things.
I mean, we don't have an event. It's no good. But last year when we had this event, there was this very like death pallor of will they or won't they sign Chris Davis? And the fans were, I wouldn't say openly hostile, but somewhat openly hostile to the team. And so this year it was starkly different because the event happened right after the Orioles had signed Mark Trumbo, which many fans were happy about. And it took the fans a full 22 minutes during the question and answer period with Buck Showalter and Dan Duquette to get to the infamous Zach Britton discussion. So I think we're making progress, guys. I think hearts are healing all around Birdland. And for those that can't let it go, well, there's always tomorrow's disappointments.
You sound pretty stoked for the upcoming season, as it were. So we were trying to look for big free agent signings, and Josh gave me two names. You gave me Wellington Castillo.
And the trade of Gallardo for Seth Smith.
Yeah, it wasn't even a signing. This is a trade. So did we miss one, Jake?
Well,
Not really. Yeah, we brought Mark Trumbo back. I really think that this Orioles team is basically where you left it last. Like when last we left our intrepid heroes almost being good enough for postseason play, that's where we are today as well. And the thing about the Baltimore Orioles is that they're incredibly frustrating to watch because they are probably you know, they're probably a middling to good team that has this way of pushing itself into contention every year. And so as unsteady as they look in, just about any department that you try to look at, when we get to the brass tacks in late September, they're probably going to be in the discussion.
Well, unfortunately, we have to go into those middling departments.
I have no fear. The closets are all open for you, gentlemen.
Oh, we appreciate it. So obviously not the best news to start spring training. Tillman is hurt, and you still have Wade Miley and Ubaldo Jimenez in the rotation. How much is this team really going to rely on Kevin Gausman and Dylan Bundy making some kind of improvement this year?
Well, that's really what it comes down to. The thing is that every year we say to ourselves, God, how is the rotation this bad? And every season it feels like they're even worse than we realized in spring training. And yet somehow we find a way to make it not quite matter as much as we would think it has to. Will they depend on Kevin Gausman? Absolutely. I don't think that there's as much excitement about Dylan Bundy because there's also the terror of his right arm just disintegrating in front of our eyes. Remember, this is a guy who threw really, really hard from basically the womb and had an injury. And at this point, he hasn't built up the kind of innings that gives us any kind of feeling that he can be a pitcher that goes 180 innings from a starter role. So we need to depend on Dylan Bundy. And I think any Orioles fan that tells you that they are really confident in Dylan Bundy, not just making that next step, but surviving to tell the tale by the end of the season, is fooling themselves.
Very honest. And what is the outlook on Tillman? I've heard that he's hurt, but I don't know much beyond that.
Yeah, well, here's being an Orioles fan. Are you ready for this?
All right. Hit us.
David Price went to go see Dr. Andrews, and he got a lollipop and a 10-day waiting period, and he'll probably dominate the league. Chris Tillman had a shoulder soreness and then another setback. And then another setback. The world is simply not fair. I don't know how big a deal the Chris Tillman shoulder situation is. I know that he's not going to start the season. The question is, how many meaningful innings is he going to give us before the All-Star break? And that's a kind of concerning question because, you know, you talked about the rest of the rotation that the Orioles have. They've got Gausman, they've got Bundy, they've got Miley, they've got Ubaldo Jimenez still. And after that, the depth is not really that impressive. It's a bunch of 4A guys if you're going to be generous and give them the last A. So how bad does that hurt the Orioles? Well, it hurts the Orioles real bad. But again, it's the darndest thing. Every year the rotation is a mess, and every year they manage to cobble it together just good enough to be relevant.
Well, I mean, it seems like part of that is just the fact that the team has a wipeout bullpen. Is that sort of something you feel is sort of a strategy in the building of this team? Well, we don't care so much about the rotation as long as we have O'Day, Brock, Drake, Givens, whatever, leading to the all-star Zach Britton.
Well, we do have gifted guys in the bullpen, and that certainly does help. And yes, that is a strength of the team. But I really think what makes the Orioles survive these things that keep happening to them is the fact that Dan Duquette has basically said, damn the torpedoes, and he's wiped out the minor league system in order to be, you know, what the winningest team in the AL over the past 5 years with one deep playoff run to his name. But what he does instead is he stocks that top layer of the minor league system with has-beens and spare parts that he can flop in and out during the course of the season. And his 40-man roster management is just exquisite. So really the thing that sets the bullpen apart is the fact that he can shuttle a lot of players down between AAA and the majors and get meaningful innings out of guys that have no business being in the majors. Like, I'm not sure if you guys remember a guy named Chaz Rowe, who for like two solid weeks in 2014 had the best slider in baseball
and
is now bagging. Right. And is now like bagging groceries or something. Right. So the thing that really makes the team click, the thing that covers the warts, is the fact that Duquette can find these diamonds in a rough, know that they, you know, have a good 2 weeks worth of worth in them, and then swaps out the parts until hopefully somebody who's actually talented can recover enough to play.
So if the team is not winning with its starting rotation and it's the magic of roster manipulation to get the bullpen to work, I would think that you also have to put a lot of weight in this lineup. They brought back Trumbo. They're paying a lot of money to pay Chris Davis. How do you see this team as compared to last year with its ability to slug its way to some victories?
Sure. I mean, I think to a certain degree, the Orioles are kind of in the position where they got to dance with the girl that they brung, which is the power. They've obviously committed to having a lineup that can slug it through. You mentioned Davis and you mentioned Trumbo, two guys that I personally like rooting for, but wouldn't have brought back if it were me signing the checks. And the other thing to keep in mind is that Adam Jones is no slouch in the power department. Manny Machado has really developed into a power bat. And you go up and down the lineup and you have guys that can hit for pop. The interesting thing is whether or not the Orioles have done enough to bring some on-base capabilities into this lineup to put some guys in front of the power hitters. Seth Smith and Hyunsoo Kim are two guys that are going to be interesting to this lineup to see if they can get on base often enough to take advantage of the fact that we can swing it into the seats. J.J. Hardy is another guy who's kind of on the downside of his career, but if he can have a decent on-base season, it could be a real boon for us at the bottom of the lineup to turn it back over to the big boys. The Orioles are absolutely going to depend on their power, but as we've seen from 2012 on, that power is incredibly impressive and fun and entertaining, and then when it disappears for a week or two, it really, really hurts to watch.
And that reminds me actually of the 2010 Blue Jays, who just mashed home runs, and by the end of August people were like, well, that's great, but you don't do anything else.
Or the 2016 right. Blue Jays.
Well, yeah, to a lesser extent, yeah. Who is leading off for this team, and should they be leading off for the Orioles?
I mean, what are you doing on April 3rd? Because it could be you.
My on-base skills are questionable at best.
Then you could be an Oriole. That is a natural.
No power though.
Also a weak spot.
Right. It could be. It could be Kim. It could be. It could be anybody really. They had Adam Jones do it last year, which is such a poor fit. But if I had my druthers, I would say Kim.
Well, it's actually interesting you're saying that, because one of the strange issues for this team last year, despite guys like Machado, Trumbo, Scope, Hardy, Jones, all hitting from the right side, is they struggled heavily against left-handed pitching. And there's a good chance that they're going to see Jay Happ on opening day, just based on the way the schedule lines up. What is the outlook for this team? Was that an aberration, or is that something you expect to be an issue again?
Yeah, I can't figure that out. I mean, the book says throw all your righties at it and suddenly lefties are not going to be a problem. And yet we do. And the Orioles lineup is such a conundrum to watch, because a lot of times it's not the aces that give this lineup the problem. They handle the number one, number two guys just fine, and turn spot starters and guys making their major league debut into Cy Young. So I don't know what to tell you what the deal is with not being able to face lefties. I hope it was an aberration, but I guess April 3rd will go a long way to determining what the 2017 team is going to look like against the Southpaws.
Just quick before Greg takes us to the end, we had the same problem last year. The name Ryan Merritt is still like a swear word to us here.
I don't even know what he looks like, and I don't like him. That's how little time we spent with Ryan Merritt, and he still ended our season. So we've reached the part in the program where I ask for two things from our guests around the AL East. I ask for a prediction of how many wins your team might have, and then I ask similarly where they're going to end up in the division at the end of the regular season. So, my good sir, what do you have in your crystal ball for the Baltimore Orioles?
Well, let me just say that I've spent some time crapping on my own team here this evening, but despite the fact that I'm very honest about their warts, I do think that they're a decent team. And when I say decent, I think that they're in that AL East clump of teams that are pretty good, among which one or two need to cement themselves and really prove themselves in order to make the playoffs. So let me answer your questions in reverse. I think the Orioles will end up in the second spot in the AL East. I don't know who will beat them out for the AL division, but I think that the Orioles are probably headed back to the visiting spot in the AL wildcard game, based, again, upon the fact that they're basically the same team that they brought back last year. So what does it take to be the AL wildcard team? I don't know, probably somewhere between 86 to 89 wins. So do you need to pin me down further than that?
We can leave it there.
We'll take it.
Yeah, we'll just draw a big smudge over the number after the 8.
Well, no, flick it upside down, the 6 is like a 9.
Tell them I coughed.
Yeah, he coughed when it was high 80s. We would definitely know it was high 80s. Beyond that, does it really matter? All right, so we have a wild card prediction from the wild Mr. Jake of Bird's Eye View Baltimore, who we can find on Twitter at
Bird's Eye View BAL.
All right, good follow. They have, of course, their own podcast that shoots out whenever they feel like it. Is that the schedule you're on these days?
You know, it was during most of the off season, but once spring training started out, we're back to weekly.
All right. Serious weekly podcast business at Bird's Eye View Baltimore. Check it out. Always fun to have you along, and I'm sure we'll talk to you during the season.
Gentlemen, the best of luck, but not too much luck.
Right back at you.
Yeah, that's the theme of these AL East previews.
Good time as always. That's like the second interview we've had where someone has although been, you know, a fan of their team, they've been shockingly realistic about their team's chances.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not hard when you watch, if you watch that team all year, just like, my God, there are so many flaws.
It must be really hard, I would say, to be in the media and just talk the team up all the time. You know, to work for the team or... Because they're inevitably saying positive things all the time, even on horrible teams.
Or you could be like the Jays media, like their announcers, and just talk up the other teams.
Yeah, just ignore the team you're playing. Oh, my goodness.
We should head back on to preview the Orioles. Well, Manny Machado.
All right. Before we head too far down that road, I think we have something else we should be doing.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
I haven't even said the first question. How could I repeat the question? Okay. We will start with Birdwatcher at Birdwatcher 88. Do you think they started watching the Jays in 88?
I don't know.
In your opinions, plural, if Team Canada had all of their MLB players at WBC, how do you think they might have done?
Do you want to go first?
Well, who are all of the players who we would need to say it's all of the players?
Yeah. Here's who wasn't there.
Joey Votto.
Saunders, Laurie, Martin, Votto. And then on the pitching side, Jameson Taillon and Paxton.
I still don't think we get out of that round.
I don't know. I mean, Taillon and Paxton can really pitch, and they can take you over. They can steal a game, both of them. And then having those guys bats, they might hit a home run here or there or do something. But getting out of the round with USA and Dominican Republic, still probably not. You're right.
But then you'd be complaining about the teams you're up against, not the actual team itself.
Yeah, I mean, they probably beat Colombia, and they might have put up a fight. I mean, they beat the U.S. before and almost beaten them the other two times they played them, so... they'd have had a shot, whereas they had no shot this time.
Yeah, they forgot the Stars part of the Stars and Scrubs, and the Stars would have definitely helped. Yeah. But we're going to go... we both agree getting out of the group would have been hard, but it would have looked like they could get out of the group.
Yeah.
At least on paper. All right, what do you got for... hit me with something.
All right. So this one comes in from Bruno Caboclo.
I cannot believe how many Raptors players are into this podcast. Do you think maybe one of them brought it into the... Wait, this is...
it's that Primo Pasta again.
Same name. So, I keep hoping.
They just share the Twitter account. It's still them.
Yeah, exactly. Pass it around.
Does Travis hitting today make it likely he'll be on the opening day roster? Also, any March Madness picks?
First answer is I don't think so. I think they're going to slow play this to death. I do not think he is the opening day second baseman. I don't think they've even hinted that he would be the second opening day second baseman. And I would like to pick Duke. Is it possible to pick Duke?
That's actually who I'd pick too. So,
all right. Yes. Well, we're going Duke.
I don't know. Yeah, just regards to the question, I wouldn't say it makes it likely, but maybe more likely the fact that he's at least doing something baseball related now. But I'm with you. I still think he's probably going to start off on the DL.
And then we have a follow-up related question from Jim Albertson at JimAlbertson10. Welcome to the podcast, Jim, because I don't think you've asked a question before. Is Devin Travis the long-term second baseman of the Blue Jays?
Yeah, I think he is. You know, like, so we talk about him being injury prone, right? He's really actually only had two injuries to his shoulder and to his knee. So it's a very good chance that he could get past this, and he has the talent to be a long-term option. So I'd say the odds are heavily in the favor of it being him.
And at the moment, barring a trade, who else is there?
Well, I guess Lourdes Gurriel theoretically could become that guy at some point, but it's still Travis.
Fair. Next question.
You have to read it.
But I can't dodge the answer. Has Greg learned how to pronounce Roofned? Well, I've stopped pronouncing it with an F, and I've decided I'm going to pronounce it with a GH, which, as you see, is also not there.
Full disclosure, when he was first reading this, he actually did say Roofned, but I guarantee the next time that Odor actually comes up on the podcast, Greg's going to call him Roofned.
Yeah. I like how I like. It's just true. He also...
This came up.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, this came up because he did a bat flip in the World Baseball Classic and the ball didn't leave the park. So when he was trotting out of the box and only got a single.
Oh, did anyone punch him as he slid into second base?
No, he'll be punching himself tonight.
There's a picture. Brian A at big_B_SR asks, who is the player you want to see succeed the most this year and why?
I think the answer to that is Bautista, because one, he's Jose Bautista and awesome and Blue Jays legend. And also because if he does have the kind of success he's had before, the Jays will probably do very, very well.
This is true, and I was going to pick Bautista, but now that would just seem to be an effort to shorten up this whole segment. Who do I'm going to go with Aaron Sanchez.
Huh.
I think another strong season out of Aaron Sanchez where he remains healthy and his arm can take this wear and tear that everyone was so worried about, I think that would really cement his place as a long-term star with the Blue Jays. And I think that'd be really cool.
I like it.
All right.
So this is from Luke at Split Letters. Do you think we'll see Anthony Alford in the bigs by the end of the year?
They didn't put split letters on the spring training uniforms yet, did they?
No.
No, I do not think we'll see Anthony Alford in the bigs by the end of this year.
No, I don't either. The only way I could see it happening is if at the end of the season they bring him up as a pinch runner because he's very fast, because he's already on the 40-man. But yeah, but you can always have a second guy. He's on the 40-man, so there's no harm in doing it.
Right. But yeah.
So I could see that, but I don't think he's going to play.
No. From Skeeter at Spez Baby, how much cash would the Jays have to include to get Colorado to take Smoke?
So this came up because their big free agent first base signing, Ian Desmond, which we talked about being baffling when they did it. He's injured and he's going to have some surgery and he's going to be out for, I think it's like 6 to 8 weeks or something like that. So this is why this has come up. I don't know. Maybe the Jays, I don't think they want Smoke. But if they did, I think the Jays would probably have to toss in a couple of million. I mean, the contract isn't awful in terms of its value for what he provides. It's just not good.
I'll leave that one for you. I just a weird situation.
Yeah, it's probably half the contract, would be my guess.
All right. Next.
All right. So this comes from Anchor Bordelia at The Real Anchor. Over under 8.5 starting pitchers used by the Blue Jays in 2017.
Under. I'm under. Fingers crossed.
God, I hope so.
Because I remember that season. What did they use? 12 in 2013 or 13?
Yeah. Last year was amazing. They only used 7 starters, and it was 2 starts from Drew Hutchison. The other 6 were all healthy because they added Liriano. That does not happen very often.
No. I mean, I remember Cincinnati did 5 pitchers for all but, I think, the last game of the season or something. They used a 6th pitcher just because of the way something had been scheduled. But they went 5, and that was like a modern miracle a few years ago. So every time something like that happens, you get talked about. So, I mean, you definitely, you expect to use 7 or 8. I don't think you want to know who the 9th guy in the depth chart is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, that's, we're just being hopeful on the under.
Yeah.
Hey, back to Skeeter again. At SpezBaby, honestly, how good did Jose look in left at the WBC? You're going to have to answer that one.
Well, we already talked about it. Not as good as the reports. I mean, he looked good. He was, you know, he was reading the ball fine and better than he does in right field. But the throw was overrated.
Overrated. Final question. You want to launch that one?
Sure. This is from Quinn Sweetser. Beyond the obvious ones, what's your favorite Blue Jays moment?
So we take out all the postseason home runs and
yeah, let's say regular season moment.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I'd say Roy Halladay's return as a Philly to the Dome, as far as one that goes recent memory, that really sort of stands out for me. Because that, you know, the giving him a standing ovation, paying him respect, and then beating his behind anyway. It was, I mean, that's awesome.
So for me, there are two. One, the Delgado 4 home run game, because that was really cool on the last day of the season. But the bigger one for me is the Burnett Halladay game, when Burnett's first start back as a Yankee, and he and Halladay went toe-to-toe, and Halladay threw a one-hitter and just dominated the Yankees, and the crowd was so loud booing Burnett. It was amazing.
And that was in my mind. I didn't steal it from you because I'm psychic.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, exactly. You could throw that one out there. And thus... go ahead.
But just before we move on, I would love for anyone listening, tweet at us. Tell us what yours are, because I'm actually really curious about that.
Your favorite regular season moment that would not show up on the... year-end highlight reel of greatest Blue Jays moments of all the time, maybe. Maybe just a game that you were at that really stands out in your mind because you were at the game and something special happened. That'd be cool, too.
Yeah, at Turf Pod.
Always at Turf Pod. So, that brings us to everybody's favorite opportunity for repentance.
Oops, I said the quiet part loud and the loud part quiet.
But what if you could do it all over again?
But... what I really meant was...
We've got 2. We've got 1 for our local team and their social media department. How big do you think the social media department is at the Toronto Blue Jays headquarters?
2 people? 1 person?
That would indicate 1 person would be able to run something by someone else and have it rejected.
Yeah.
So they decided to use a hashtag... which has been used many, many times by many, many other people and organizations, apparently.
Which is actually the current slogan for Westin Hotels.
Maybe there's a tie-in they're not telling us about. That could be the problem. Okay. And then...
the Scandal Hotel is the Radisson, so I don't know.
And then just to double up on that, they came up with this... meme template, because that's how viral things work, is you tell people how to meme.
Yeah, so what was really funny is they put these suggestions, like there were like 10 things, pick from these and put them on the background. It's like, that's not how memes work. You don't tell people what to do. So what ended up happening is people were taking it and making fun of the team using the chosen background. Of course that was going to happen. How could they not see that coming?
If you followed the Bodie McBoatface debacle that was the online contest, you should know that any time you let people come up with submissions and you're trying to be serious about it, that's just not going to happen. It's the internet. The non-serious people far outnumber the serious ones or sincere ones.
But they especially do this when you try to tell them what to do.
Yes. Yes. If you tell people on the internet to color between the lines, they will color whatever is not in the lines. Yep. As brightly as possible. That's how it works. And I don't know where in your social media department you are that you don't know about that, but there's your tip of the day. Just let it do its own thing, and then you pass along what other people have done, and that's where the passion comes out.
Exactly.
All right, so that's the do-over, is don't go pushing memes, pull them from somewhere and ask these people if you can share what they're doing and give them credit for it because they worked hard on something about their team.
Use that rally cap button.
Yeah.
Rally cap underscore rally cap.
That's where we're at with that. And then we have a little bit of a time warp. You want to take this one?
Yeah. So this is Peter Gammons. He put out a piece, Toronto Building a New Culture. He talks about, you know, moving from Atkins or Beeston to Atkins and Shapiro. And at some point he starts lifting off these things that they're going to need to do to compete. Things like, do they need Dave and Travis to be healthy and hit 310 to 330 as John Gim thinks he can? And he says, yes. Can Justin Smoke and Steve Pierce produce? They think so. But the first one he lists, do they need Michael Saunders to produce? Of course. It is very important that Michael Saunders does well for the Phillies if the Jays want to succeed in the American League East.
No, no. It's like we originally came up with the do-over with the idea of people just sort of flubbing a line and misspeaking. How do you flub that in print?
Because he's so old and it's been doing this for so long, he just doesn't care.
It's like 2016, 2017. That copy paste will get you every time when you're doing series previews. You cannot copy paste last year's series preview without very careful attention to detail.
It's funny because he talks about Kendrys Morales and that they didn't re-sign Edwin, but Michael Saunders still on the team.
I feel bad that Michael Saunders didn't even show up on Peter's radar when he signed a contract elsewhere. Baseball's a tough business, so Peter, we're giving you a chance to come on the podcast and bring your copy of the current 40-man Blue Jays roster with you next time you do a season preview. I think it's fair. Yeah, it's fair. Oh, my goodness. We have taken up lots of time talking about lots of things, but I do give you the opportunity, sir, for a final thought.
Why, thank you, Greg. So we talked about the World Baseball Classic and some of the fun things that we saw there. One of the things we didn't see because he had minor injury was Japanese player Shohei Ohtani. Cannot wait for this guy to come to the major leagues. The pitcher who could be the best pitcher in the game, who also hits absolute bombs, and it's amazing. He was named the All-League DH for the Japanese Professional Leagues last year.
A pitcher.
In the MPB. Yeah, a pitcher. He's first-team pitcher and first-team designated hitter. And there's a tweet, which I'm going to put in the podcast post, so go check it out, of an absolute monster home run that he hit yesterday in the Japanese spring training.
Oh, it is an amazing thing. My final thought is just going to be a callback. A couple weeks ago, really 3 weeks ago, I talked to you and Chris about the hand signal for the four-pitch automatic intentional walk. And you two were tepid at best. I had to really drag you into that it would be something, you know, four fingers, that's it. Thank you very much. There was an entire article, I believe it was Jason Stark, who talked to like five different managers around the league, including John Gibbons, about the four-pitch walk gesture, and they all had a wacky and or unusual answer. So thank you very much. I am vindicated.
Hey, once I understood the question properly, I think I was just like a moonwalk or something. I think that's okay.
All right. Fair enough. Oh, my goodness. So I failed to mention off the top of the podcast, but I will mention it here. We have a Patreon. It is www.patreon.com/turfpod. If you like what we do and you would like to give us an opportunity to make the podcast better with some extra bonuses, prizes, etc., etc., we could use your help. Slide on over to Patreon, check it out, and see what you could be helping us achieve. If not, if you'd like to continue listening for free, that's awesome as well. We always enjoy your questions. And as usual, you can submit trivia questions for Josh right to me. But hasn't happened yet, but I'm optimistic this week. So it comes to the point where I say you have been Joshua Howsam at Joshua Howsam, and I have been Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead 2010. And our guest this week was Jake from Bird's Eye View Baltimore at Bird's Eye View BAL. And this was Artificial Turf Wars episode number 48. And we will see you next week.